Yeah, I saw the video and biblical flood, plant
Yeah.
trees, cultivate gardens, raise
Yeah.
livestock.
Welcome to Thrive in the Future podcast, positive solutions to help you thrive, designing your intentional life, homesteading, gardening, and rediscovering culture and tradition. Check out Thriving Food Forest Design. Let us create an edible foodscape, a perennial paradise for you so you can grow more food and become more self-sufficient. Schedule a free consult session with me at thrivingfoodforest.com.
Okay, welcome back to Thrive in the Future. This week I have Jason Snyder with me. Welcome, Jason.
Nice to be here again. Good to see
Yeah.
you. Good to see you, Scott.
It's good to see you. So give a little background for some of the folks who may not have seen you on the previous episodes.
Background, well, I live in the high country of North Carolina. That's as precise as I'll get. But I guess most immediately relevant is we just had Hurricane Helene kind of, ravage our whole region. I have, I'm kind of developing a homestead at our place and, a little bit of a setback there. Our house is okay, but our field became a river. The damages weren't too large, I would say. Our driveway got washed out. A bunch of our trees, I mean, they just completely like got knocked over. I had to like lift them up, and a lot of the fencing was washed away. Our garden was flooded, so everything in the garden was basically couldn't use anymore because the water wasn't very clean. I don't know if I've jumped too specifically into like what's been on my mind. Broader background, I have a background in, I don't know, I've done all kinds of things. I've taught at the university. I've done like research and analysis. I've done landscaping type work. So I've just done all kinds of things. But in general, I'm one of the co-founders of Doomer Optimism, and we're interested in, despite all of the huge challenges we face as people in this age, how can we carve out ways to be optimistic? So that's what we try and focus on.
That's great. Yeah. So we jumped into the hurricane, but that's what I wanted to talk about is how to stay optimistic and then recover regeneratively from that. So what was it like riding it out?
Well, it was surprising. We've had, hurricanes come up in the past, and usually we just get a good rain. And so probably a week before that, I thought that would be the same thing. The Wednesday before the main hurricane, we woke up in the morning and it was clear that the water had, kind of like gone through our field in certain spots, and certain parts of our driveway were washed out, but the water was still basically in its, the creek was still basically in its course. And so we're like, wow, that's surprising. We weren't expecting that. And oh, it's going to get worse. So suddenly like the alarm bells went off, right? So that day we went and got some more supplies, provisions. And then the day of, I mean, like we weren't too worried about our physical safety. We're kind of, our most of our land is in a floodplain, but our house is up on a hill that's pretty high. And so we weren't worried too much about our house flooding, maybe the basement. Slightly worried about landslides because we were, our hill was right behind us. But there's a lot of vegetation on it. It's not too steep. So I wasn't super worried about that. But, when the day arrived, when we woke up and we look outside and, there's just a giant river, looks like, one of like the River Ganges or something, just a huge, one of these famous rivers, the Mississippi, whatever, right? Like going through where your field usually is. We're like, okay, well, I mean, at a certain point, you just realize, this is, like we're pretty feeble creatures here, right? Nature or, God or, whatever the larger forces are, they're much bigger than us. And so we knew already, okay, there goes our driveway, we're going to have some various damages. But the day of, I mean, we were just sitting inside most of the day, looking out our window at, propane tanks floating by, large just items of all sorts, from other, you know, it's washed away from other people's properties going by. And, you know, we couldn't go anywhere. You know, we lost power, lost network and internet. We did have our neighbor who we could, you know, walk over and talk to. And, you know, we're pretty good friends with our neighbor. So it's not like we were like all alone, but we're like, wow, yeah, we're pretty cut off here. Like we can't cross this raging river. We can't call anybody. We can't do any of that. So, you know, we're just going to have to figure it out. And it was a pretty, you know, pretty surreal kind of day, I have mm-hmm. to say.
Yeah. And then, so did you get a lot of wind or anything like that? Or it was mainly a rain event?
It wasn't super windy at our house. I think where we're situated, there's some mountains, you know, kind of, you know, facing the direction that the wind was coming from. So the wind wasn't actually that bad. Like none of our real tree branches, like large trees near our house, broke off or anything like that. Like you go outside and, you know, sometimes there'd be like a wind gust, but it wasn't like you go outside and you're in danger of being knocked over. So it was really, you know, other areas, the wind was much worse. I mean, a lot of trees in a lot of parts of the region just like fell over, and you can just see like, you know, trees, you know, part of it was the ground being so saturated because it
sure.
had been raining for several days before that, unrelatedly. And so mm-hmm. the ground was already saturated when the storm came. So a lot of the trees, the wind and, you know, the saturation of the soil knocked them over. But where we were, it was just the water. You know, again, like we're, you know, most of it is a floodplain. And so I finally, you know, saw what that meant. You know, we had heard about, you know, like people talked about like the 1916 flood, right, being like a big deal in the region. And I've, you know, read histories of that and the 1940 flood. And this was on par with those. This was actually probably a bit worse than each of those. More like a, you know, 200 to people have said up to 1,000 year. Some people have said up to a 10,000 year kind of flood. So it was mostly the water that the most salient for us at that point.
Wow. So do you have a source of water? It didn't get messed up or anything? I mean, you're not like on well
so
water.
We're on a, you know, we're on a well and mm-hmm. it's an electric pump. You know, I thought about it before, but I'm now more interested in getting a hand pump after this. I mean, we had stored up a little bit of water. Mm-hmm. And we knew we were probably gonna lose power. So we had filled up containers and stuff. We also have, you know, a rain barrel, which can't drink directly out of, but you can treat it. Sure. We also have, a little spring as well. So, you know, for the first couple of days, we were basically depending on all of those, right? We were like boiling spring water for tea and using, rain barrels for washing dishes and, filling up the toilet so we could flush it, that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. But after even by the end of that day, and the next day we couldn't drive out because our driveway was completely washed out. But you know, we had friends come by to check on us and bring us stuff, and you know, we were able to kind of like our creek bridge held, and a lot of people's creek bridges didn't hold. So that was really, we were very fortunate that our mm-hmm. creek, if that hadn't held, then we'd be in a very different situation. So, you know, we were able to like borrow a friend's car and get rides with people to even the next day, like go into town and get the, you know, supplies we needed and stuff. So, I never felt at any point that like, oh, we're in serious danger here. So I mean, again, we're fortunate, you know, a lot of people died in the storm.
Sure.
People, you know, who, you know, we live along a major highway, so you know, we got, you know, like even in the afternoon after the storm had subsided, there were already starting people drive and getting turned around because it was kind of, the road was kind of cut off, but pretty soon, you know, like we weren't way up in the hollers, so to speak. You know, with a lot of people, their creek bridge did break, and they were just completely cut off. And so for a lot of those folks, I think even up till now, their situations were much, much more dire. and just dangerous in terms of, you know, human life.
Sure. So how long did it take for the water to come down?
I mean, the high point was around noon. It started getting to the point where we can actually kind of like get to our bridge because our driveway is pretty long. We share it with a couple of neighbors. The driveway is pretty long. You know, probably by late afternoon, we were able to kind of like walk through the water. Like there was still, you know, like more rivulets, I guess, and we were able to kind of walk through those and get to the bridge kind of thing. But our, you know, there's also our bridge was blocked for a while because there was just tons of junk that built up on it, and so we had to like next day clear our neighbor and my neighbor and I cleared that off, just all of the junk and, you know, branches and everything, stuff like that. So yeah, I mean, and by the next day, you know, it was basically, you know, we had like standing water in various places, but there was no more river.
Yeah, I saw the video and biblical flood, plant trees, cultivate gardens, raise livestock.
And you know, and in this particular case, I mean, again, I think most of our trees are going to survive. You know, we lost probably several like small saplings that we had planted that just got buried with like mud, or you know, our part of our driveway blowing out is a lot of like just gravel and sand and river rocks washed into our field. So
Sure.
still needed to clean that out, clean that up. And so a lot of things just got buried. But most of the trees, I just had to kind of lift them up, get all the gunk off of them. So in some cases, kind of, you know, prop them up with something. And you know, they were still alive. You know, we'll see. You know, they're definitely damaged. And so, you know, we'll see if they make it through the winter. But then, you know, we have our like our chicken coop. You know, our chicken coop is on stilts. It's near the house where the water did get to, but it didn't get very high. So, you know, the chickens were just hanging out in the coop. And then our garden, you know, basically, you know, we lost, you know, some like end of year crops that, you know, we're not going to eat because it's, you know, the water is pretty polluted.
Sure.
But you know, and you know, some of our, you know, garden fencing and chicken run fencing got damaged, had to fix that. But you know, so it did directly impact those three things that, you know, I talk about, you know, talk about in that tweet. But you know, it's like, well, you know, now we're aware that this can happen. You know, but we're just going to keep, you know, we're going to rebuild what was damaged, and then we're just going to keep building because, you know, that's what we do.
Yeah. So do you have a bunch of creek bottom new soil in your pasture in your field now that you're going to be able to you're going to have all this great soil now, or is it did it wash everything away?
Well, you know, the bottom lands, you know, people talk about the bottom lands here are the most fertile because historically you do get the occasional flooding, and it brings in all of the soil and silt and deposits it. And so we
Sure.
probably, I'm sure, got some of that. So it was a fertilization. Of course, you know, historically you didn't have, you know, industrial pollutants also being mixed
Yeah.
into that, right? You know, a lot of various industrial pollutants, petroleum products, you know, all kinds of things that also probably
Said
got it.
propane tank was floating down the river.
Yeah, you know, I mean, we probably saw like half a dozen propane tanks, just like large propane tanks, like just like floating down the river. So we'll see what the net, you know, what the net effect of that is on soil fertility, or, you know, for our pasture. You know, next year we're hoping to get sheep, and so I'm hoping that the grass does come back. And it's not, it seems okay. Like the grass that didn't get covered with, you know, silt and rocks, you know, looks pretty healthy at this point. So pretty optimistic about that.
Yeah, good, because that was a month ago, right? So some of it's probably bounced back a little bit before you haven't got your, have you got your frost yet? Your
We
first
have
frost?
gotten some frost. Yeah, it got really cold like 3 weeks after the storm. You know, it was getting down into the 30s. But it's since warmed up again. But yeah, I mean, you know, a lot of, again, like looking at our, you know, trees, like we have a lot of chestnut trees and apple trees and just various fruit and nut, and they definitely look damaged. Like a lot of the leaves were had either got washed off, or they're looking very kind of kind of dead at that point. But at the, you know, the way I figured it is, well, it's they were going to fall off soon anyway, and so as
Right.
long as the tree survives, it's probably not that big of a deal in terms of getting the energy that it needs to sustain itself, right? So the big test again will be to see, how they fare over winter and how they rebound in the spring. You know, that'll be
Right.
very interesting to see.
And how many nut trees do you have now?
Oh gosh. I mean, we have probably upwards of 15 to 20 chestnuts.
Wow.
We had just planted a bunch of hickory, shagbark hickory, and those were tiny. We had planted them from seed in the last fall, and we had about 10 of those coming up. That most of those got buried. We had like 35 hazelnuts or so, 35 or 40, I can't remember. We lost probably five of those, I would say. And a couple of more, a few more are like not looking great, but they seem to still be alive. So yeah, it would be, it would be a real shame if they didn't bounce back, but I think they will.
Well, good. At least they didn't all wash away, right?
Yeah, and I just planted five heart nut trees. I've heard that those are the Japanese walnut. I heard those produce relatively quickly for nut trees. So it felt good to, like, after the storm, even almost as a symbolic gesture, like, keep planting, right? Don't just recover, but like do something new, right? And so, more for the psychological benefit of doing that, of like, look, we're still making progress, even though we had a setback.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I've got to get some of those heart nut trees. They sound really good. Yeah, and the hickory I've grown for 2 years and they're still only like 4 inches, 6 inches
Yeah,
tall.
that's definitely, you're doing that for your kids and grandkids kind
Yeah.
of situation for
I
sure.
think they 10 plus years before they bear their first nut.
Right.
So.
And I've heard it's 40 years before they reach peak production.
Right.
Yeah. That's, I mean, once you get into those timelines, you're like, okay, well, I might have one bumper harvest and then I'll croak the next day kind of thing, but it's okay. Next generation will enjoy.
Well, that's
Yeah.
what we're doing, planting for the future generations anyway, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
That's
Yeah.
good. So what else are you doing from a regenerative standpoint to rebuild, to what would you do differently that
What
you
I do
haven't talked about already?
differently now that I know that this kind of thing is real, that can happen. I mean, so one, I mean, it was more my dad who was wanting us to like build little cabins out in the field. We're like, I'm glad we didn't do that. Because they would have probably gotten washed away unless we put them, unless we put them on like 10 foot high stilts or something, and thick layer of, in a thick layer of concrete kind of thing. But differently, I mean, I'm pretty glad where our garden was because it wasn't in like the thick of the flooding, and so just spacing of things, I don't think I would really change things. I mean, I think differently, it's more of, what's happening in the larger community, right? So, on the one hand, there's just been so much, outpouring of like people just serving other people. Just the first few days, everybody was checking on each other. Everybody was making sure that, everybody they knew was okay. People were helping each other out in various ways. And so I think just the, and people, I guess, life slowed down a lot, right? Like a lot of people didn't, unless you're like, a lineman or, in a trade that you're in immediate disaster recovery, like a lot of people weren't working. So people had time to just kind of like visit each other, chat, take their time. you know, relate to each other, empathize with each other with their situation. Right. And so regeneratively, I think, you know, the best thing coming out of this is there's, I think, just the connections that are made out of this, right? Like we as a, you know, community have gone through something together and we support each other. And there was not really anybody who is like trying to take advantage of the situation, at least people that we know, you know, like, mm-hmm. or, you know, like, so I just think that in terms of culture, you know, our culture is going to greatly benefit from this event. It's unfortunate that it requires these kinds of events for that to occur, but that's one big thing. You know, on the other hand, there's, you know, this new threat of, you know, what people call disaster capitalism, where, you know, the vultures are circling around seeing like, okay, how can we take advantage of the situation, right? Yeah. Financially. And so there's, you know, been reports of a lot of people, like even in the first few days after the flood, like getting unsolicited text messages, basically saying, hey, you know, are you interested in selling your house? You know, presumably because you had a lot of damages and you can't afford to fix them. So, hey, we'll take it off your hands. Right. That kind of thing. But on the other hand, there's already a lot of kind of community mobilization, you know, recognizing that and trying to figure out how to prevent that. So, you know, just a few days ago, I went to a community event, the grassroots organization that, you know, was basically that was the topic of like, how do we rebuild in a way that benefits the locals, right? Not in a way that benefits, you know, the gentrifiers, the second homeowners, the investors, the speculators, all of that. And so I think a lot of the, you know, potential threats, but in reaction to those threats, the regenerative potential is on a cultural level. And us really trying to define, you know, what do we really value about this place? And, you know, what direction do we want it to go? Because without intentionality behind that, you know, it could just, you know, lead in a direction that is not regenerative.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. When you were just before you said culture, I was thinking, yeah, this is a culture building event, right? You have space, you have that slack time, like, David Fleming and Sean talk about in, Surviving the Future. Right.
Yeah.
And that breathing that space, I'd like to see a lot more of that in regular life, you know, in the cycles and stuff.
Absolutely. And, you know, in terms of resilience, you know, I think that we're going to be much more resilient in general. Like, you know, a lot more people are going to have generators, right? Mm-hmm. A lot more people are going to have water barrels. A lot more people are going to have Starlink or something, you know, so they can get internet when everything else goes down. You know, a lot more people are probably going to store away food and water and fuel. So I think, you know, it was definitely a wake up call because, you know, part of the larger narrative in this place was like, oh, we're pretty safe. We don't really have natural disasters, right? Like forest fires aren't a huge deal because we get lots of water. But hurricanes aren't a big deal because we have the mountains that run interference and break it up. Tornadoes aren't, you know, don't really happen here. So we're like, hey, we're sitting pretty here, right? Like climate change, you know, it's not going to affect us very much, whatever, right? Whatever, you know, whatever it happens to be. And so this was kind of a wake up call that's like, you know, actually, you know, we're vulnerable in a very specific way. So I think people might think twice about building certain ways in floodplains, for example. People might think twice about allowing, you know, developments on top of, you know, like $1 million mansion developments on top of mountains that, you know, decrease the absorption capacity of the water so that it ends up flooding in the bottomlands. Right.
Sure.
People might think twice about, planting various invasive species that don't have deep root structures and can't absorb water very well. And, you know, and lead to more landslides by having it there. And so I think, you know, a lot of us will be thinking about, okay, like how can we boost our riparian areas, right? Like how can we plant more trees and stuff along riparian areas that absorbs at least some of the water when it, you know, pushes over the bank kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So yeah, in that way, like, you know, we're just going to be much more aware of like how we build. You know, you build a barn, Maybe you don't want to build in a floodplain, right? Maybe build it up on a foothill or something. So things of that nature, we're going to be in a better position next time for sure.
Yeah, that sounds great. So one of the things, like when power goes out, reportedly the cell phone towers only have a few days of batteries, and then somebody actually has to go out and touch them and turn them back on and stuff. Did what was it like being without comms for that long?
Again, it wasn't too bad for us because we could get into town, and the comms were put back in town pretty quickly. So we're near a town of about 30,000 people or something, about 10 miles away from that. And so the comms there was restored pretty quickly. So like once a day, or once, every couple of days or something, we could make a trip into town, do all of our communications, for half an hour or something, or an hour, and then get back to it. But, so we weren't like, we weren't cut off from the world. On the other hand, in some ways it was very nice, right? Like we went to bed a lot earlier because when it got dark, we didn't have screens that we could, sink into for a while to distract ourselves. We weren't on social media all the time. We weren't really paying that much attention to the national news situation, and all of that was frankly a relief, to be, one, kind of a bit immune from all of those things, and two, having to focus on very tangible things in your life. So like, oh, we want to cook dinner. Well, we have an electric stove. We can't do that. Well, okay, we do have wood. We do have a wood fire stove, so let's cook on the stove, right? And that was just very, a nice change of pace. Or other people would barbecue, right? And we didn't really do this. We were thinking about it, but then our power turned back on. Of like, so a lot of people, have stored meat in their freezers. They don't have electricity, or they don't have a generator starting to de-thaw. So a lot of people were just having like barbecue parties and stuff. We were like, well, it's all going bad anyway, so we might as well just invite a bunch of people over and cook up a bunch of meat and have like a an event kind of thing. So that that's so there was just a lot of, in many ways, there was a lot of benefits of just slowing down, not taking the tangible things for granted. Oh, we just cooked dinner on the wood stove. Now we have to wash up, wash dishes. Well, the sink, the well pump doesn't work, so we can't use the sink. Well, we got to go outside and use our rain barrel, right? And it's just a very different set of experiences to, not take these basic things for granted. And, when the power came back on, of course, I was relieved, but a part of me was also like, a little bit, not saddened, but it was just kind of like, oh, okay, well, I guess we're gonna get back to modern life again. And in some ways, it's, a little bit unfortunate.
Yeah, you escaped modernity for a week,
Yeah,
right?
exactly. Yep.
Well, that's great. So plant trees, cultivate gardens, and raise livestock.
Right. And be careful what you do in floodplains. Yeah.
That's great. Thank you, Jason.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for inviting me on.
You bet. I like it. A different story that you don't hear from other folks.
Yeah. Well, first time I've had this kind of story.
Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely.
Hey, if you like this episode, leave us a tip on Venmo or Cash App at Thriving the Future. Or join the Patreon, patreon.com/thrivingthefuture. You get early episodes and you get extras. Thank you. Check out Thriving News. That's where Perpin and I share longer form articles about homesteading, mindset, milpa gardening, food forest, etc. Go check it out at thrivingnews.com. Thank you for listening to Thrive in the Future podcast. If you like what you hear, please click that like or subscribe button in your favorite podcast app. Follow us on Twitter @ Thrive in the Fute, and also go to thriveinthefuture.com.